For researching this presentation, I downloaded the book of Job onto my computer. It opened up a virus. The computer locked up, and 10 of my best oxen died. So, okay, that isn't true. All my oxen are fine. So, I like to start every presentation with oxen jokes. So, it just happened to work well for this one. When I was a kid attending Sunday school at the First Baptist Church in Emmett, the book of Job both fascinated and troubled me. It's one of the most memorable, action-packed books of the Bible. Samuel? I don't remember that guy. Nehemiah? I couldn't tell you the first thing about him. But Job, I remember Job. It's the only book outside of Genesis that I can think of where God and the devil sort of hang out and talk to each other. And stuff happens. Crazy stuff. Here it is in a nutshell, if you don't remember it. There's this guy, Job, very upstanding guy. He's prosperous, has a nice family, and he's a godly man. And this is important. He does everything right. He burnt offerings, not only for himself, but for his kids as well. He figured, hey, I know I haven't cursed God, but maybe my kids have. Then the scene shifts, and God and Satan are having a philosophical discussion, as God and Satan are wont to do. God, it should be noted, starts the conversation with small talk. Hey, where you been? And the adversary says, wandering throughout the earth. Then God goes out of his way to say, hey, look at my man Job. He's honest, has integrity, avoids evil, and he reveres me. Satan responds, of course he does. You make life great for him. Take away all the good stuff, and he'll curse you. This is a paraphrase, by the way. So think about it. Job, poor Job, he's having a good day, a good life, and he doesn't even realize he's right at the center of a cosmic bet. Long story short, bad stuff happens to Job. Job goes off on an epic rant about how much he hates life and how he wishes he hadn't been born. Job's friends come over and basically make things worse. They argue that anything God does to Job is justified as a response to sin. Job has this to say about his friends. Quote, I have heard many such things. Miserable comforters are ye all, unquote. A fourth friend, meant to appear more wiser than the previous three, suggests that sometimes bad things happen to good people, not because they have sinned, but possibly as a type of protection from greater sin, that it could have some sort of instructional benefit. But through it all, Job continues to complain. He's lost it. Finally, God shows up and chastises Job for his litany of complaints. Job repents, and God rewards him with even greater riches. So, of course, as a kid, this was awesome and disturbing. I was drawn to the story by all the death and destruction. Satan tortures a guy by giving him boils, painful, oozing sores all over his body. That's pretty dramatic. But beyond all the drama, the surface message had terrifying implications. This wasn't a God loves you kind of story. This was a be afraid, because even if you do all the right things, bad things can find you kind of story. Or maybe a God loves you, but don't expect any favors kind of story. But how would this all play to a modern audience? I don't know if people read the book of Job anymore. Let me put it this way. Nobody has ever made a movie about Job. It doesn't come up a lot. So thinking about a modern audience, this is where I come in. I've rewritten the book of Job to make it more relatable to those of us who are more familiar, say, with The Secret or Conversations with God than, say, the Torah. So here it is. This is my story of the book of Job. (Clears throat) Once upon a time, in a land that would eventually be coveted for its oil-rich resources and strategic proximity to the Holy Land, there lived a man named Job. This man was enlightened, a free thinker, empathetic, and creative. He recycled, donated to public radio, and didn't text while watching movies. He was a really good guy, is what I'm saying. And without fail, he never forgot to give offerings and praise to God or goddess, depending on which gender aspect of the holy Job was celebrating. Now, thanks to some cutting-edge herbal fertility supplements, Job's wife had 7 sons and 3 daughters. Although Job, the designated sperm donor, could not possibly understand the pain, suffering, and toil that was involved in carrying 10 children to term, he still tried to subvert traditional gender roles by handling the domestic duties, thus setting an example to others in their land. It was the least he could do. Job owned the largest free-range, cruelty-free ranch in all of the land. He maintained a carefully balanced, symbiotic relationship with the earth and all the thousands of living things that called the land home. Job also had many employees, all of them enjoying a living wage with health, dental, a 401k plan, and stock options. On Friday, they had Hawaiian shirt day. His sons would often take turns holding celebrations and self-improvement workshops in their own homes, and they would grill root vegetables. There they would indulge in a glass of antioxidant-rich red wine, which in moderation had been touted for its health benefits, or perhaps a cup of soy milk if they were feeling adventurous. One day, a multicultural multitude of angels representing every race, gender, and sexual orientation came before Goddess to sing Enya songs, which Goddess always enjoyed. It was her second favorite thing, right after hot yoga. The adversary, or Dikchini, which is the direct translation from the Hebrew, arrived with them. They did not mind this, as they realized that inside Dikchini was a lost little boy who needed love and acceptance. "Namaste, Dick," Goddess greeted with love. "Where have you been lately? I was beginning to worry. The cherubim have been nervous. You never write. You never call." "Oh, I was out doing my thing, strengthening the military-industrial complex, cutting funding for the poorest among us, making inappropriate homophobic comments. You know, the usual." Goddess sighed and shook her head. "I sense great pain in you, Dick. The longer you hold on to it, the more it will keep you separated from the bliss of all that is." "Oh, brother," Dick sneered. "When I need inspiration, Dick, I always find it in nature. I mean, have you seen Job? Here is an individual who truly lives in the light and is always in touch with his true, authentic self. He always embraces positivity and good. Maybe he has a lesson you could benefit from." "You're kidding, right?" Dick said with a smirk on his face. "Oh, the guy's living in the light, all right. The light coming off of his new iPad. Come on, it's easy to be positive when you go to bed each night, snuggling in between your 1,000 thread count sheets and listening to Deepak Chopra audiobooks. Job's never known a day of true pain in his whole life. You take away everything he has, and I'll give you another red state voter." "Okay," God said doubtfully, for he had switched to his male aspect so as not to marginalize the male angels in his company. "While I don't agree with your viewpoint, I want you to realize I respect and honor it. I hope that by embarking on this learning experience, it will bring about positive change within you." God paused. "Just don't kill him." "Sure, sure," Dick said. Then he turned into a giant devil bird and flew away. One day, when Job's sons and daughters were holding their harmonic concordance festival, a messenger came to Job, looking quite panicked. Job started to feel his pulse quicken, and a sense of dread racked his body. "We're not out of kale, are we?" "It's worse than that, Job," the messenger said between breaths. "The oxen, the sheep, the goats, They've been captured by Procter & Gamble. They're going to test their cleaning products on them, despite there being many cruelty-free alternatives to animal testing. Good goddess, Job exclaimed. I thought they stopped doing that. And what's more, the interns, Job, they're being tested on by Procter & Gamble? No, worse. They formed a Rush Limbaugh fan club, and they're saying really unkind things about Arianna Huffington. Job shook his head in disbelief. Then he looked squarely in the messenger's eyes. We must be strong. Everything happens for a reason. I'm sure this will turn out for the best. After all, before he could finish, yet another messenger ran up to him. Job started to tremble. Job, you need to sit down, old friend. Job pulled up a rock, and the messenger kneeled before him. I'm afraid I must tell you that your children have left this world, Job. They have ended one chapter and started another, leaving us to bravely continue on. You mean they're dead? Job stammered. They were playing in the fields, just like they always do, all happy and laughing. Then they were swallowed up into a massive sinkhole. It doesn't look good. The messenger began to sob. There, Job said, trying to comfort through his own tears. They hugged it out. 15 minutes later, they let go, and Job said, did anything survive, old friend? The messenger's face lit up. Yes. Why, yes, Job. Fortunately, your cherry red Prius was left unscathed. Isn't that great, Job? It's like a miracle. They both started to laugh with relief. Just then, unfortunately, Dick Cheney, in the shape of a large devil bird, swooped down, picked up the Prius in his merciless talons, and dropped it in the ocean. There was much wailing from Job and his three messengers. Job ripped his clothes off, gnashed his teeth, and pulled out his hair. This is a really bad day, Job shouted. Then he felt a calm wash over him. But somehow, being naked makes it better. I will live in this moment with a grateful heart. I surrender my heart to the love of Goddess. Blessed be. Wow, Goddess sniffed. That's just so moving. It needs music. When he says blessed be, the choirs should just swell, I'm telling you. The angels murmured in agreement. Dick Cheney crossed his arms, perturbed. I know what this really needs, he said in a sinister tone. Oh, Dick, you've been practicing your sinister tone. That's really quite good, she praised. All the angels clapped politely. Really, scary. You have so many talents, big guy. She beamed at him proudly. So tell me, what does this really need? Okay, Dick said. I'll tell you. This really needs boils. Again with the boils, God said, switching back to the masculine. You know, that's your solution for everything. Never underestimate the power of a good boil, Dick responded. Maybe, and this is going to sound crazy, maybe you should try encouragement, kindness, and love instead of fear and hate. Dick put his hand to his chin and looked thoughtfully up at a cloud. No, I think I'd like to just try the boil thing. Unless you think my somewhat non-traditional viewpoint is in some way less valid than yours. God looked aghast. Don't think I don't know what you're doing. Whatever. Catch you on the flip side, chump. Then Dick Cheney turned into a giant devil bird and flew away. That night, Dick Cheney replaced Job's eco-friendly, non-toxic, organically made soap with a bar of Zest made by Procter & Gamble. Job, being somewhat distracted by his recent losses, didn't notice and used the bar to cleanse his entire body before going to bed. The following morning, Job, after experiencing a demonic allergic reaction to the soap, awoke to great pain. He was covered in boils. Did you replace the soap? He yelled to his wife, who was in the other room. Did you replace it with the soap of the devil? No, why? She asked, walking in. As soon as she saw him, she screamed, Good goddess! Then she composed herself, not wanting to hurt his feelings. That's a new look for you, she chirped unconvincingly before slowly backing towards the door. Don't get up, Job. I'm going to go look for the kids in the backyard sinkhole. You just take it easy. With this, Job crawled back into bed and began to weep. Now, when you're covered in boils, it's always nice to get company. So Job's three friends Eli, Bill, and Zoe came over to comfort him. When they saw him, they were much repulsed and began to weep. They ripped off their clothes. "That is so sad," they all seemed to agree, "but somehow being naked makes it better." Then they formed a healing circle and began to sing R.E.M.'s Everybody Hurts. After the third encore, Job felt lower than ever. "I'm feeling less than abundant right now," he admitted shakily. "Truly, the thought of divine grace seems like some sort of illusion. I feel so alone in the universe." The three friends gasped in unison. "Whoa there, friend," Eli said compassionately. "Somebody needs to listen to some Joel Osteen." "Yeah, Job," Bill chimed in. "I know you're having a spiritual challenge right now, but let's not talk crazy." "I'm not crazy," Job spat. "My Prius got carried out to sea by a devil bird." "Oh, Job," Zoe piped, "if only you could see the negative energy coming off of you right now. It is, like, seriously affecting my vibration." "Well, Job," Eli said, "it's like you've told us before. Like attracts like. If you're having negative thoughts, you're bound to attract negativity. You create your own reality." "So you're blaming me?" Job asked incredulously. "Don't you understand? It's me. I'm the most positive person in the world. I was the most positive person in the world, and weird, terrible things still happen to me. I had nothing but pure thoughts of love and abundance. I was connected to the infinite source." "Think hard, Job. Are you sure you didn't have any negative thoughts, perhaps even on the subconscious level, something you're not even aware of?" "How am I supposed to know that? If it's subconscious, I'm not conscious of it. Now am I?" "Hoo boy. We need to clear his chakras," Zoe whispered to Eli and Bill. "Let's hold hands and form a chain." Job backed away, shaking his head violently. "I don't want to hold hands. I don't want to form a chain." Realizing that Job was in a negative space and filled with dark energy, the three friends decided to leave and just psychically send him thoughts of love and healing from a nearby Starbucks. Just then, Eli's younger sister, Elihu, arrived. They called her Ellie because they couldn't say Elihu without giggling. They told her the whole ordeal, which made Ellie very sad. "You guys," she admonished, "I know Job is in a dark place, but he doesn't need to hear words of discouragement." "Job," Ellie said, walking towards the corner where he had curled up into the fetal position. "I know I'm just a young person and I haven't read all the spiritual books that you have, but hear me out. I respect you so much. I've always looked up to you and thought, wow, that guy's got it together." Job grabbed his sleeve and blew his nose into it loudly. "Listening to you," she continued, "you taught me that we are always connected to Source and that nothing can truly break that. Goddess is everything, including the pain of the boils and the wings of the devil bird that carried off your Prius. Everything that is, is. The danger in life is to deny death, because when you deny death, you deny life. And when you deny life, you deny yourself. And when you deny yourself, you deny..." I'm sorry, where was I? You lost me, Job said, confused. Something about life and something else. It was helping, though. Just then, Goddess appeared in the shape of an oscillating fan, creating a mighty wind. "Job," the voice echoed with majesty through the room, "it is I, the source of all things. I have something important to tell you." Everyone in the room gasped in awe at the holy fan. "That's really unusual," stammered Job. "Job," she said, "take a look around you. Look at the earth, the stars, all the wondrous creatures, rocks, ice cream, cat videos. I created them all." Job looked at her somewhat confused. "And your point is?" "Oh, Job," she said, turning away, it's just, I worked so hard on the universe, and I don't know, I thought you might be a little grateful, that's all. I mean, where were you when I was doing all the heavy lifting?" With that, she began to bawl. Hey, Job said tenderly, it's not that I'm not grateful, it's just that, do you know how long it takes to create a constellation? That's a lot of heat, Job. And then to put them into interesting shapes. I didn't have to do that, you know, but I wanted it to be special. For you, Job, I wanted it to be special for you. At this, Job began to weep. "Oh, Goddess, I'm sorry. I was truly being self-serving. I had my own human interests at heart and wasn't even validating the intrinsic spark of the divine that exists in everything. Please forgive me." got a smile great big through her tears, and they embraced, which was somewhat awkward for Job because it is very difficult to hug an oscillating fan. After that, Job got together with his friends and formed a healing circle. Zoe cleared his chakras using a set of very powerful crystals, and they all agreed to intend only positive things. Then they all played Scattergories. God blessed Job, returning the imprisoned animals back to the land where he nurtured them to health, but not before taking pictures of their horrible mistreatment, to use in PETA literature. Job's children managed to climb out of the sinkhole and were now writing successful blogs about their experiences. Also, Job won the lottery and bought many, many fine Priuses. And so it was that Job and his family lived and prospered, taking comfort in being connected with the infinite source and delighting in a state of abundance and love. So this is my version of the book of Job. I took a few liberties with it. So if you cross-check it with the King James Bible, it may not be completely correct. But I think the message is still the same, whether it's the King James Version or my 21st century hipster postmodernism, whatever you want to call it. Because this is the tale of the righteous sufferer. This basic story endures because some things haven't changed. Bad things still happen to good people. And chances are that a voice is not going to come out of the whirlwind and give you an answer that satisfies the basic human need for equity and justice. Human beings are distinct storytelling creatures, and we feel psychic dissonance when our narratives do not make sense. Job was the hero in his story. He didn't deserve pain, but pain he received. He cursed his existence, which is a roundabout way of cursing God, if you think about it. God responds to Job saying, quote, "Where wast thou when I laid the foundation of the earth? And shall he that contendeth with the Almighty instruct him?" Unquote. I've always read this exchange between God and Job with a bit of ego, perhaps taking God's chastisement of Job a little too personally and a little too literally. The message goes beyond a didactic moral and addresses a universal hallmark of humanity. We want the universe to be what we want it to be. We want the universe to listen to us, acknowledge our troubles, and do something about them. Stephen Crane writes, "A man said to the universe, 'Sir, I exist.' 'However,' replied the universe, 'the fact has not created in me a sense of obligation.'" And that chasm between what is and what we want is, as any Buddhist will tell you, the formula for a good deal of suffering. Life is a weird, wonderful, terrible, absurd thing, full of bliss and pain, disaster and triumph. We are microscopic motes drifting in the cosmic soup, trying to understand our experience within an infinite, unknowable context. We write our stories, love as hard as we can, and hold on for dear life. And in the end, there is one clear truth. It's a miracle that we are here at all, and I am grateful for the experience. Thank you.